Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is TortureCast.
Welcome, everybody, to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of your not-so-good-anymore San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad, and joining me today is a sullen but sultry Ben. How you doing, Ben?
I don't know that I've ever been called sultry in my life.
Well, now you have, so...
You're right. I don't know that I'd ever been called sultry in my life prior to this.
So the next
is this
time
the depths of which we've sunk? You've got to start calling me sultry. It's that bad.
It's that bad, man. It is that.
It's gotten
bad.
That bad. We're looking for good signs anywhere we can find them. Can we go with the San Francisco marginally above average heights? You know,
I don't know if we're going to be marginally above average
soon. The San Francisco not particularly Titanics.
Yeah.
It's
use those adjectives.
Man, this is the kind of week that really just beats down on you. It's even with a bright spot, it's been really rough.
Yeah, and as you know, literally a minute or two before we started this broadcast, or started recording, I should say, we're not really broadcasting, that's a technical thing there for you laymen out there.
We're podcasting.
We're recording a podcast, we're not streaming or broadcasting. The Dodgers are actually able, unlike the Giants, to close out a 1-0 lead in the ninth, which they did. They beat the Cleveland Indians 1-0, and now the Giants are officially in second place, a half game back. And what's insane is that we've had a couple of bonusodes since the Giants were, you know, 9.5 games up, but our last podcast was when they were basically 8 or 9 games up, our full podcast.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember we sounded very optimistic at the time.
Yeah, we were kind of cocky then, to be honest.
In fairness, so with the, you know, everybody was.
Everyone was. And
not going to blame anybody for that.
All the memes going on about the Giants and the Dodgers and blah, blah, blah. We all thought it was great. I mean, we certainly...
They were pretty great.
We said, you know, I remember bringing up the point where, well, they're 9 games up. Well, what if they lost just 1 game per week? They'd be tied in... just a little over 2 months, which is plenty of time left in the season after that. So
then, as it turned out, we didn't even wait that long.
Is that they kind of didn't wait that long to just lose one game a week. In fact, the Giants really couldn't have lost more games to the Dodgers than they have in the last 22 days. In 22 days, you might think a really crappy playing team and a really hot team, you might lose 5 or 6 games. Oh, no. Contraire, mon frere. The Giants have lost almost a half a game per day during that stretch, having lost 10 games to the Dodgers in 22
days. That's
cool.
There go all of the games.
All of the games, literally just... I mean, if this...
All of the games.
I actually haven't looked this up, but I know that the Dodgers had an epic collapse, whatever, back in 1954, I guess it was, to the Giants. And I want to say it was something like a 10 or 12 game lead with like 3 weeks to go. It was very similar to what the Giants have lost in the last 22 days. If this happened at the end of the season, of course, it would be the worst collapse in Major League history, right?
I'm sure somebody's done worse. But when you look at it, we always want to make sure that we're doing things better than the Dodgers. So there you go. Yeah, we are way better at melting down than they are.
But, you know, the Giants have got to thank the San Diego Padres for that wonderful 10-game losing streak back in 2010. Because, of course, that opened the door for them to get back in the race. And, of course, they went on the last day of the season. What's interesting is that the Giants had that 9.5 game lead. And at one point, they actually had lost 9 out of 10 games. So, basically, one game off a 10-game losing streak. And right now, they've only won 4 out of their last 19. I mean, that's just... even if they had played just a couple of games under 500 during that stretch, just mediocre ball, they'd still have a 3 or 4 game lead, and we would still be worried. But it's almost like despair now. I was very upset when they started hitting the streak with the Nationals.
Very depressing.
And we went to the Rockies game, the first game of three, when Romo blew it in the ninth. And then, of course, the next game he blew it in the ninth. And, of course, the next game they blew it in the eighth. And
yeah, they just wanted to take some of that onus off of Romo, obviously.
Yeah, clearly. They wanted to take some of that off of him. But they could have easily swept that series if everything had gone according to plan. You know, the Rockies had only won one game or whatever after trailing after the eighth. And
I was going to say that, as I think, was it you that pointed out that the Rockies did really, really terribly this month, and that's including sweeping the Giants in three?
Oh, yeah. They've absolutely tanked it. In fact, after their sweep of the Giants, they lost something like 7 in a row. And before coming into the Giants, they had lost a ton in a row. Same with the Nationals. Mm-hmm. They had lost a lot in a row before they came.
Mm-hmm.
The Reds, of course, the most recent visit, they were hot. They did come in hot. But in the almost 15 years, I guess it is 15 plus years now, of AT&T Park, no team has ever swept the Giants in a 4-game series until now. And it did happen, unfortunately, this past week. And I was the proud recipient of not only seeing Romo's blown save against Colorado in the first game of, of that 3-game series, which was very, very traumatic. But, of course, that just was compounded with it. Was like, okay, fine, he blew a save, whatever. But then the next night he did, and then the next day they blew a 2-run lead. But then we come into this game, and the Giants' offense struggled again. Matt Cain had a beautiful game. Beautiful game.
Matt Cain was great.
He definitely had to scatter some hits in the beginning. He had 6 hits through like 4 innings and a walk. So he had lots of base runners. But the Reds were like 0 for 5 with runners in scoring position. So he was making the pitches when he needed to. And it was a beautiful game. They go to the ninth inning, and Affelt and Casilla shut down the eighth. And Romo comes in, and I had actually tweeted out, my spidey senses are tingling. I don't think this is going to go so well. And I know, clearly I'm not
the one obviously thinking that. There's something to be said for, but you know what? It's just because it's been bad the last few days.
Yeah, it wasn't like he'd been perfect for 20 straight games, and I had that feeling. It's, of course, because of recently he's been horrible. Even the 2 saves he had in the last 5, he got 2 runners on both times. And he was very, very close to blowing those games as well. So he comes in, and I mean, he's not a guy who issues many walks. I mean, you look at his numbers over the last 3 years up until the last month or so, and you can compare his numbers to almost any of the premier closers in the league, and he's right up there. He's a little guy, doesn't have much stuff, but he knows what to do with it, and that's what's been so amazing about this guy, and is why he's such a fan favorite, not just because of his personality, but because he does more with less, I would say.
And he's one of those guys that was drafted really late and has made his way into being a major league closer, and obviously he was the guy in 2012 that he's the reason that you look back on that, and you can't look back on that without looking at what Romo accomplished during that series.
I mean, series and Jay Bruce and the World Series with Cabrera and all the other games in between.
Sure, but it's not impossible to look back at that and say, at some point I think this is going to probably turn around in some way, but it sure ain't right now.
No, and sure enough, he comes in and he had 2 out of 3 batters were going to be lefties, and so the first batter was Votto. And what was funny is that I was sitting next to Ryan Leong. We were chatting the whole game. And he actually leaned over to me, and he was concerned about Brandon Phillips coming up next. And I was like, whatever, dude, he's a righty. I'm worried about the 2 lefties, the power lefties, including Jay Bruce and the rematch of the NLDS. That's what I'm worried about. He'll just throw his frisbee sliders to Brandon, and I think it'll all be good. So Votto, he did get to 2 strikes, got to a full count, and then threw one just outside the zone. It was close, but it was a ball. I mean, I agreed. So he got to first, and the first 2 pitches to Phillips were fantastic. Frisbee sliders, 3-4 inches off the plate. He was diving for them, not as far as the Rockies were. The Rockies hit him really well. I think the Rockies had a game plan against Romo because some of those hits, they just flicked that bat out and just flicked it into right field. Phillips was not doing that. And he quickly got to 0-2. And then he threw a ball, then threw one right inside on the heart of the plate, and he fouled it off. And right there, I looked at Ryan and went, he cannot throw that pitch again. Brandon is all over it. He threw another ball, I believe, to go to 2-2. And then
hung a slider.
The slider. I mean, it literally was dead center of the plate. Dead center. It wasn't like, oh, he pulled an inside pitch. He went oppo with the – no. The slider started on the inside part of the plate, hung beautifully, floated, you know, did not have a sharp break.
Majestically, if you will.
Majestically floated right to the heart of the plate. Brandon, on an 0-2 pitch, just said, oh, thank you very much. I mean, it was
a no-doubt. Look, it's all Brandon Weekend thump.
Well, yeah, I tweeted out, oops, it's all Brandon Weekend and the wrong Brandon.
Wrong Brandon, but...
And, you know, they go up
some, you know, one of the Brandons had to do it because none of ours were clearly going to step up, so...
And, well, the thing is that, you know, there was nobody out. First two runners score. It's already 2-1. He did get the next three batters, but two of those three hit it literally to the wall in left field.
Mm-hmm.
Juan Perez's back was touching the padding. Both of those guys, if they'd hit it just a couple of feet further.
No, it's every as soon as that happened, everybody was hitting it to the wall. Yeah. Just everybody to the wall.
So it easily could have been a 4-1 game or even worse. And so they go to the bottom of the ninth, and of course, you know, heroics ensue.
Mm-hmm.
We get the base hit by wasn't Hicks. Who it was Panic, I believe, got the base hit. And oh no, it's Pence. Sorry, Pence got the base hit. And then Panic came up and had that epic battle. And I've never personally seen, I mean, maybe when I was a kid I saw Mike Scott, but I was so young I don't remember. I've never seen a guy who throws 100 miles an hour in real life. And to see Aroldis Chapman come in and blow that cheese, it was, I'm sitting right behind home plate in the press box, it was really amazing to see mm-hmm. how quickly that ball got up on players. And Panda fouled off four or five of those 100 to 102 mile an hour fastballs. Oof. Worked an 11 pitch count. I mean, it really was an amazing, everybody was into it. You could feel the momentum building. Then Posey steps up as a pinch hitter because he didn't start the game. And it was like, well, I tweeted out, we need a superhero right now. And sure enough, he
101.
He fouled one and he got a ball. I think it was a 1-1 count. Yeah. And he turned around 101 or 102 mile an hour fastball to left field, to the left of the left fielder. I mean, he just tattooed it. And what's unfortunate is that he almost hit it too hard. And it would have been great if he had hit it a little bit less and it got into the gap. Between left and center,
because that would have, you know, you could have gotten somebody else. Yeah, it would have been over. Second and third with no outs.
That it bounced off the left field wall and got right back to the left fielder. And you know, I was watching. There's no way Panda could have scored. I mean, it wasn't even a question. I mean,
right,
he was just getting to third when the ball got to the relay man. So obviously, Flan had to stop him. But you're thinking, okay, winning run at third, nobody out. This is a no-brainer. I mean, you're 95 times out of 100, you're going to get that run home, no matter who's pitching. It's just going to happen.
Right.
Wild pitch, error, hit, sacrifice, fly.
You would just think, like, how is it not going to? But at the same time, like, you've seen this team, and you know that this team isn't.
Yeah.
We've seen more than once from this team. Like, well, let's see. So we've got a guy on second and a guy on third and zero outs. Oh, yeah, it's like having the bases loaded with zero outs, and we know what happens then. So
yeah. In fact, second and third is like, well, okay, at least they don't have the force at home, right? You know, they're not going to get the double play.
Right. So
you're thinking, this is a
second thought, you know, it's really great.
Prime opportunity to score here. Runner on second didn't mean anything anyway, so it was just, you know, runner on third. And to see the check swing ground ball to short with the drawn in infield, and Panda had to stop. I mean, he would have been dead to rights.
Right.
Thrown out to first. And then I think the curious call of the day, which is in our armchair manager section here. I'm kind of skipping around here, by the way, so who cares?
You never, everyone's favorite, what just happened and why?
Yeah, what just happened and why. And what I think is funny is that I think we've attended like 9, 10, 11 games in the press box, something like that. It's not,
right,
not a, you know, a full season or even a half season yet. But there have been these controversial calls that I've debated with other reporters in the box, and there's been a healthy debate. This was a call that not a single soul in the press box could understand. And
right,
the whispers that were going around were unlike anything I've ever heard in the press box. Even the Reds beat writers were wondering,
like, wait,
what the hell was going on.
I was very surprised because after you put in the explanation you had a reaction to it. And I noticed that when Pav wrote it in, he just sort of presented it as it was, because I don't think he knew what to say to it either.
Yeah, they try to go, right. Well, this is interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, that's like when Carl Stewart's doing it, he'll usually just come right out and say it, but it depends on who's writing it. But it was just like, with that one, it was sort of just like, and there it is, and I don't know it. I don't.
Yeah. So
like, I don't, I feel like you run out of things to say at that point because everybody's kind of already said it and you just go the hell with it. So here's what he said. Okay. Anyway.
No. So for those of you not cluing in here, what happened was Brandon Crawford's spot was up in the lineup. And of course, Chapman.
Crawford had a rough day. Chapman's hard to hit.
Yeah. And of course, more than likely, Crawford would not have gotten a base hit. I mean, obviously we know this, but here's the thing. Crawford is hitting 338 or coming into that bat. 338 against lefties, most of his home runs against lefties, slugging over 600 against lefties.
Mm-hmm.
Arias is hitting 175 against everybody.
Right.
Without a single extra base hit.
Right. He doesn't have one.
And so it's not like, oh, he's hitting.
And I'm not saying that he needed one.
No. No, of
course not. He just needed a hit.
He just needed a sacrifice fly. He needed a fly ball. He needed
True.
Something that poked through. Yeah, he needed
anything. Let's rephrase that. He just needed an anything.
And anything other than a strikeout, a pop up, or a grounder right to the shortstop.
Basically, one of those things happened.
And I'm sure Crawford, you know, something bad would have happened anyway because it's the Giants and this is the slump they're in. But here's what I propose to Bruce Bochy. He said in the post game interview, he was challenged by it right away by Pavlovic. He asked him, so you basically pinch hit Arias for Crawford. Was there a reason for that? It was a very, you know, kind of like, he's hitting 336, he's hitting 175. It was just kind of like, so why did you do that?
It was just an opportunity for him to have an explanation that made sense.
And Bochy was Mr. Grumpy Cat, there's no doubt. I mean, obviously, all of us were grumpy, but he was especially grumpy. And he just straight out laid it down and said, I just believe Chapman with his 100-mile-an-hour fastball and his slider would have been too tough on Crawford. And Arias, I thought, and I quote, gave us the best chance.
Right.
And the, you know, you get those just weird, broken, awkward just silences in between questions.
Yeah.
That was one of those awkward silences where...
No, I don't think anyone had any idea what to say.
Everybody was going, really? Okay. I don't even know how to follow up on that one, and I won't. Because no,
like
did.
there isn't that you, I mean, it's,
yeah, you just kind of go like, yeah, okay, well, thank you for the sound.
So you're right. Yeah. Now we know. Anyway, and moving on.
So again, rewind back to Crawford. I'm not saying he would have gotten a hit or sacrificed fly or anything like that. And he might've struck it out because Chapman is an ungodly pitcher.
Sure.
But no one, and I mean no one, and tell me if I'm wrong, Ben, no one in the post game conference would have asked Bochy, hey, so that was a little odd that you kept Crawford in, lefty versus lefty. Why didn't you pinch hit Arias in that situation?
Yeah, not specifically not that question. No one is going to say, hey, you know, you had Joaquin Arias on your bench. Do you think maybe that was a good time to move to him? Yeah. Like, Nope.
He's hitting 175. Crawford's hitting 338 against lefties.
Right. It's, you know, boy.
Yeah, so that was what was interesting. But so I think Bochy obviously wasn't a statistical call, and he knows the numbers better than all of us.
No, and I mean, you know, he's
made a gut call.
Is he a player's manager? Sure. Does he want guys like Arias to think that they have, you know, some kind of like ability at that situation, try and get their confidence up? Sure. Except at the same time, you know, he's also trying to win.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell that move was something that got them closer to winning.
Yeah, I just, everybody in the box was like, why is Arias coming up? What is going on here? I mean, everybody was questioning this. Blanco's a switch hitter. I was trying to think of another lefty, you know, maybe it's like Tyler Colvin or something that was up there. You know, maybe you'd like say, oh, okay, well, maybe he can go up. So, of course, Arias duplicated the previous batter and hit a weak ground ball to short.
Right.
And it couldn't advance whatsoever. No chance.
Slow clap.
Yeah.
Slow clap.
And the other thing is that with a lefty, even though the infield's in, if you pull the ball to the right side, at least you have a slightly better chance of
maybe
getting that runner home. I mean, obviously,
not necessarily right, Panda.
No, but if you hit it right to the second baseman or first baseman, of course not. But I mean, if you hit it a little bit off to the side,
right. If somebody has to range over for it,
maybe. And then of course Adam Duvall. I don't blame him at all. He's fresh up, you know. For the minor leagues, he had
stab at it. But no one would have looked at, well, Duvall is our last hope. I feel good. It's, well, Duvall is our last hope.
Okay. Gets lucky.
Yeah, you know, it's well, the Vols are our last hope. Why the hell not?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean,
he fouled, to his credit, he fouled.
It's one of those balls. Ones like, if you're not Buster Posey right now, I don't feel like there's a whole lot you're going to be able to. Yeah.
Well, once it got to two outs, then, yeah, all the air went out in the stadium. It was just like, oh my God, this is not
going to happen. Yeah, well, here we go again.
Here we go again. And
yeah, that's the hard part of it, is that it's, you know, we're at one point it was the, well, it's not over yet. And then we sort of moved our way into, well, here we go again. And that's what made things really difficult, is we hit this, like, this point of, okay, well, that's not going to work. And this happens with this team periodically. It, you know, in a sense, we're kind of spoiled in that it's not the entire season of, oh, look, a one-run lead. We'll never make it through this one now.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's how it is in a slump, is you start, it's the fans, sometimes when the entire team slumps, the fan get a feel for what it's like when players slump, where it's like, well, here we go again. Oh, nope, that's another one. Why can't they score runs? You know, and that, what do you think the guys who can't get a hit think?
Yeah. Well, it was the mid-2000 Giants that were incredibly bad at these situations, like you were saying earlier, bases loaded, nobody out, runner at third, nobody out. It was incredible how many times they could not drive that run home. And aside from, actually a home run, the absolute best, easiest, highest probability of scoring is a runner at third with nobody out. You can't get a better scoring chance. Like, bases loaded is not even better because you have the force play. So, I mean, it's runner at third or runners at second, third. But I would say to score one run, your best chance is a runner at third with nobody out. And they had that. And it was just so incredibly bad. And it was Chapman's fourth night pitching in a row. He finished the inning with 30 pitches. He was tired. And that was kind of an explanation of why. It was a hit by Pence, a walk to Panda, and a double by Posey. And you're thinking, oh my God, all the odds are stacked against this guy. All the odds are stacked in favor of the Giants. And there's just nothing. They cannot do a damn thing. And then they go into the 11th, and there was some more problems in that inning. Javier Lopez came in and started the inning and gave up promptly a leadoff double to Votto, which was surprising. You know, obviously he's usually tough on lefties, and he whacked a double, went to second, and then they intentionally walked the next guy, and that brought up Jay Bruce, another lefty. And so they kept him in the game because they walked Brandon Phillips, who had hit the home run earlier.
Right.
And with nobody out, Jay Bruce, and, you know, I'm thinking, okay, well, he's a power hitter, but he still might bunt here because it's the right call. And sure enough, he lays a drag bunt down the third base line. Now, Panda had been playing in, but when that bunt came down, it was obvious that Javier Lopez was going to field it. So Panda just immediately starts backpedaling to third.
Right.
And Lopez picks up the ball very quickly. The ball was hit very hard. And Votto, who is not a swift runner, was at least 25 feet from third base. At least. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was about a third of the way still away from the bag, if not more. And he did give it a quick glance. And again, everybody in the press box expected him. He could have just flipped it underhand, and he would have been thrown out by 5 feet.
Right.
There wasn't even close. But he kind of did that hesitation. Then he whips around and throws out Bruce by like a half a step. And what happens after that? Well, okay. They intentionally walk the next guy to load the bases for the force play. Then Machi comes in. He does get the strikeout. He gets the two outs. And then it was just what the Giants could not do. It was a single, two-run single. Then there was a double. Then there was a triple. Then there was a double. Then there was a single. It was five hits in a row. The Reds scored five runs after there were two outs. And obviously that's, you know, Giants could have used one of those hits. That would have been nice. But in the post-game press conference, I think it was Bags that asked that question. Oh, no, he asked it about Romo. But I think it was Pavlovic that asked the question, a second question. Hey, there was that play at third where Lopez fielded it, and Pavlovic actually said it looked like he had a clear shot at third. Did you think that? And you think the Giants dugout is right there. I mean, Bochy is probably 20 feet from the bag. He sees that play way closer than I did. And they show the replay, of course, in the in-house monitors. And everybody kind of groaned in the press box because it was very clear that he had, I mean, it was a guaranteed shot other than a bad throw, or Panda couldn't catch the ball. As far as the timing, guaranteed shot. And Bochy very defensively said, no. He had no play at third. No, none whatsoever. And it was that very defensive, like he kept going on about it. You kind of go, okay, well, clearly you're right. You're being very defensive about this, or you're throwing yourself under the bus to protect your players.
Right.
You know, and I think that's probably what it was. Because I think the worst he would say is, well, you know, maybe Javier could have had a chance, but he took the sure out. But he didn't even say that. He just said, oh, no, there was clearly, clear was not a chance at all. And again, it was that very curt answer and just the uncomfortable silence
please,
afterwards.
Yeah, I have nothing else to say.
Because it's
don't
like
continue
some kid telling you, no, the sun sets in the east. That's it. And you're like, okay. So it's a side of Bochy I haven't really seen before. He's definitely grumpy Bochy right now. He's not a happy manager. I mean, think of how pissed us fans are. He's got to be, you know, eating this up. But I do want to go ahead and look back at the old history machine here and do a little historic standings check. And even though the Giants are playing horrific baseball right now and they need to turn around to even have a shot at the West,
to say the least.
A wild card.
Right.
They are actually at or better than they've ever been in the last 4 years as far as their record right now. And that's, you got to look at that as a positive. Kind of like, at least the plane hasn't crashed and killed everybody, I guess, is another way to look at it. In 2013, last year, they were 4 games under 500.
Right. And
3 games back of first, seven games worse than they are now. In 2012, they were only 1 game worse than they are right now. But they were half game back. And guess what? They're half game back right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're pretty much exactly where they were in 2012. When they won the World Series. 2011,
said for that.
Ironically,
but
that's their best record they've had in the last 4 years, exactly where they are now, 46 and 36. And they were 2 games ahead in first place. But of course, they're even with the current Giants. So they've matched their record so far through 2011.
Yeah. And, you know, a division lead is always going to be contextual. You can talk about how many games up or down you were. You can also talk about the record, but they're never going to be the same thing.
Never going to be the same thing.
Right,
and then in 2010, of course, their first World Series championship, they were actually only 2 games above 500, 42 and 40. And at that point, they were 7 full games behind the Padres.
Oy.
And that, of course, means they were 4 games behind the current Giants team, meaning the current Giants are 4 games better than that. So, again, a lot of people are going, that's it, they're done, they're toast, they're whatever.
Yeah, you know, but I think those of us that have been around this team for a few years know better.
Yeah,
that it is. There's the old June swoon. We've had
what
entire.
Have you done, yeah, what have you done for me lately? In fact,
right.
The Giants last year, which they really did. This was the beginning of the end for them, and it was. You know, mostly because of Pagan.
Right, but last
they went
year
10 and 17.
It had a lot to do with Pagan, and Pagan's actually is looking at getting started on coming back at some point soon. Which
yeah, he's
is
not
a
coming
nice
back
change.
In August. You know, this
right.
year, unless you know he comes back and hurts himself again, but. You know, last year
knock on wood right now, sir.
Yeah. Last year they were 10-17 in June. This year they're 10-16 in June. So remarkably similar month. And funny is what's ironic is that it started out with a 3-game sweep of the Mets. They actually started out June with three wins in a row.
Right. But that seems like a long time ago now, doesn't it?
3 weeks.
The thing really that we've seen with this team before though is they'll just go completely quiet for months at a time. It's not usually this bad, and we usually don't notice it because they're not at the lead of the division by just the amount where they'll have lost it by the end of June. But we've seen this before. This isn't the first time. Is this one of the worst? Yeah, but it's not the first time. We've seen this team sort of have these moments where suddenly everybody forgets to hit. And then the starters will start to just sort of falter, which they're coming back from right now, which is good. The defense will suddenly forget, what is a baseball? I don't know how baseball is. But they'll spring back from it eventually.
Well, I mean, they're not going to play 200 ball or whatever
no,
they're playing right
not
now.
The rest of the way. I mean, they also aren't going to play 800 ball the rest of the way, and that's something that was happening the previous month.
No,
so, you know.
We recognize when they hit their high water mark at 9.5 games, they were 42 and 21, which is 667 ball, 2 out of 3.
Right.
Which was on pace for 106 wins. We knew they were not going to win 106 games this year. We knew they weren't going to win 2 out of 3 games. That's just not going to happen. We knew that they were going to play worse at some point, but I don't think anyone expected a correction this strong, this big, this soon, this fast.
Right. Sort of all at
it's
once.
It's just, you know, you kind of expect that whole, oh, they've lost 10 out of 15. They've lost 20 right. out of 35. I mean, something where they're slightly under 500 for an extended period of time. Not one where they're literally playing like 250 ball. I mean, or even right. worse. Actually, they're worse than that right now. They're like 210 ball or something. Again, that's also not gonna last either. So I think one of the big questions I have is that, will the real San Francisco Giants please stand up? And what I mean by that is, okay, they're not a 667 ball team. They're not a 250 ball team.
Right. They're neither
what
of
are
these.
They?
Right. And I mean, if you're looking at it over an entire season, you're going to get it by default, you're going to get an accurate view. But I think you're going to get an accurate view. You're going to have good stretches where the streaky guys got streaky and the hot guys started to warm up. But, you know, you're also going to have like the first month where we did really nicely and then we just bottomed out for a couple of weeks, except this time each of those streaks was about a month long.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, is the All-Star break going to change anything? Who is our All-Star rep going to be? Is anything going to be affected by that?
Well,
I think it's safe to say that none of the Giants are going on the home run derby teams again.
No. When they're 21 games above 500, though, in the beginning of June, mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I think it was – who was it? It was when they were with 100 games left in the season. They said if they go 50 and 50, they're going to win 92 games, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, well, this team's easily going to be 500 the rest of the way. I mean, how could they not? I mean, they've just dominated everybody.
Right.
So, I mean, well, 92 was like a low mark for a goal yeah. for wins of the season. And we were talking on our last podcast. I think I called 94, you called 96 or something like that, or 97. I don't know what it was. But we were all calling in the mid to high 90s. Well, where their record is right now, they're on pace for 91, 92. And that's after, you know, having this losing streak. So I'm really worried because if they don't have another big burst in them, assuming they have another losing streak, I mean, is this team actually, I mean, I think there's obviously a very good chance they're going to finish above 500, but if
sure.
they, if this is an extended funk, and I'm not at 250 ball, but like at 400 ball or something like that, where they're just mm-hmm. slightly under 500, that 10 games above 500 they are right now could easily be erased in 2 months. You know,
right, and, right. Well, and, I mean, it could go either way.
Well, you know, look at 2011.
You can rebuild a lead in 2 months. You can re-lose a lead in 2 months, and you can keep things pretty even in 2 months and have it all run up to the wire. I mean, this team isn't one that's giving us a really good barometer reading of how they're going to play out for the rest of the season. Quite frankly, neither are the Dodgers. They sort of went in the opposite order.
They went opposite order, exactly.
Right, but they had a really crappy streak at first, and then they came on an upswing. Right. No, I get that.
Even at this time last year, they were still like six games back of first place. The Dodgers
right. and this
were not
time
in first place.
They've surged up towards that much yeah. sooner. But on the other hand, we hit an early lead that we've almost like I can't remember the last time we had a lead hit like that in May.
No, that's never happened before, ever.
Right. We tend to go on a late upswing.
I think they've had early in the season was 1993 when they were nine games up on the Braves at the All-Star break.
And right, and the Giants have a tendency to kind of have late upswings most seasons. Now, is that going to be true this year? I don't know. But it is something that we've seen is that they tend to late swing up. And so, you know, it's hard to look at it and say, hey, this is a team that's going to play like this the whole way. It's hard to look at it and say, hey, this is a team that's suddenly going to spring back to what they were doing before, even though obviously that's what everybody wants and is, you know, talking about online. But we're looking for the team that at least can scratch out some runs and that has effective pitching and that has defense and the one that essentially that won the World Series in 10 and 12.
Yeah.
That has a little bit of pop and has it show up at just the right time and knows when to use its youngsters and has at least one unexpected up and coming star and just kind of, you know, comes out of nowhere. And this team sort of did that in May and then overdid it in May and then did none of it in June. And it's so staggering that you're just like, there's no way, right? There's no way that this can have, like, that they can just seesaw back and forth like this for the rest of the year. Things have to start evening out. But, you know, that's baseball. You don't know that.
And hopefully, you know, Brandon Belt, who's been mashing the ball in his rehab,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get to him later in favorite guys. So he's going to be coming back real, real soon here.
Very true. And hopefully so is Angel Pagan.
Hopefully Pagan. I just hope
that,
it's not,
that changes a lot.
I just hope it's, yeah, exactly. He was day-to-day, and then they waited as long as they could before they had to retroactively put him on the 15-day DL.
Right. And so if they're playing it carefully with him, obviously, you know.
And I'm just afraid it's one of those injuries where, it, very similar to Scudero, where it starts out very innocently. Like, oh, he's just got a strain. Oh, it's just a thing. Oh, he's on the 15-day DL. So it's only 2 weeks. And then it gets extended another week. And then pretty soon he's on the 60-day DL and never coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just really concerned about that, man. I'm just... Because the reports have been that he's taken some BP and shagged some fly balls, but there's, as far as I'm concerned, no.
But the reports also include that he didn't really look very good during the BP, exactly. And like he wasn't swinging full out. He said, and
there's not been very positive. Like, oh yeah, he's within days of coming back. I mean, it's more like this. Yeah, he's kind of sort of a little better, but not really there. So
yeah,
I'm really concerned that either he's going to come back too soon if he really is hurt. And go right back on the DL to even longer. Or this is going to be one of those nagging injuries that will just translate into, oh, he went through more rehab, he went through a chiropractor. Oh, it's been another 2 weeks, and he's still doing this, and he's still doing that. It's another 2 weeks. And then pretty soon, he's having, you know, cortisone injections and all these other things until he comes back. And that's what happened last year. And you look up the record with and without Angel Pagan, and even Bruce Bochy during the pregame press conference in the dugout that I attended on Saturday, he admitted, he's like, I'm completely shocked by that difference in record. He's like, but I think it just really has something to do with Angel Pagan. He's a table setter.
We don't have somebody else that fills that role.
Yeah. Bruce Bochy didn't do the whole like, well, I think it's just a coincidence or whatever. No, he said, you know, I can't put my finger on it, but clearly he is a reason. You know, completely putting it out there that, yes, we need Angel Pagan back. And Gregor Blanco is just not cutting it.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's there's something that's missing, and it's hard to point to Blanco and say that it's all you. It's really more that you're pointing to Pagan and you're saying it's all when you're not around.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Blanco is not a poor man's Angel Pagan. And that's the problem, is that that's how he's being used. But he doesn't have the slap and contact ability that Pagan does by any stretch of the imagination. Well, okay, I guess in his hot streaks, maybe, but yeah, those streaks haven't been sustained long enough to really be able to say Blanco is a player that in a pinch you can use. It's more like Blanco is as close as we got to having a major league ready hitter sometimes that is fast and can play center field and more or less fills the spot Pagan had, because everybody else falls into the same spot in the lineup.
Yeah.
You know, if you're asking me, you know, who do you push up into first in a situation like that? Oh, my answer is actually Hunter Pence.
Yeah, I actually agree. I think
Hunter Pence is fast. You know, he's fast. He's an aggressive base runner, and he's a much better contact hitter.
Mm-hmm.
And Blanco makes an okay number two guy. No, Crawford makes a pretty good number two guy. You know,
I think like Hunter Pence should be hitting leadoff right now.
Yeah, and that's something that supposedly Bochy has talked about. I'm sure that's a pretty universal opinion by this point. I'd love to see it happen, just because I think that having Blanco hit leadoff is doing bupkis for the team right now. That doesn't mean that I don't think Blanco has some value on this team, as he absolutely does. He takes care of a lot of the, if not more of the defense that, that Pagan provides in center, and with marginally better routes most of the time.
Yeah,
but we're using him as a substitute for Pagan really isn't the solution, and that's sort of what we've come up with in the meantime. So it's there are some questionable decisions that have been made. They all come back to the same place. We've given, you know, contracts to guys who are a little bit past their primes, but who have been performing, you know, ahead of where we expect, and we're sort of dealing with that now. The upside is these are guys that really have proven there's a reason that we did it. But at the same time, now you're dealing with a lot of guys that are just going to be more prone to injury. And it's a tough thing to navigate for any team. And now we're kind of seeing the ends of that.
It's just really hard when you're running a lineup out there that has Gregor Blanco and Adam Duvall and Joe Panic.
Yep.
And those guys, it just, you know,
isn't the situation where they should be getting these kinds of opportunities.
Yeah. Half of the Grizzlies are pretty much starting or pinch hitting for the Giants these days. And you know, credit to them. Good, congratulations. You made it to the show. Here you go. Have a few big.
Yeah, and I mean, they've had their moments. Have a couple of moments for sure.
I'm sorry. I mean, just.
This isn't the situation where I wanted to see Joe Panik.
You cannot win the West with three or four Grizzlies in the lineup. You just can't.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, credit to both of them for having fairly decent splash starts when they got out here. But they're playing like kind of like we expect. And it's not even like we can be really upset about that. They've done fairly well. Panik has shown some nice defense. I can't really complain with that much. Duvall is not making a complete embarrassment of himself. So, you know, it's like I'm not upset at them, but we're in a rough situation, and it's not one that they should be in, but we don't really have another option.
No, they don't have another option. So
okay, I don't know that this is going to lead a whole lot of other places beside us being upset and speculating. So why don't we actually jump right into something else? Let's otherwise I'm just gonna sit here and be like, yeah, I mean, it's really difficult because it's really difficult. And it's really hard because this is really hard and it's really difficult.
Well, you know, there was a lot of trade talk before the All-Star break, before they hit this big slump now.
Second baseman was really the thing I think we were talking about most. Mm-hmm. And I think that's still an interesting concept depending on who the second baseman is.
I think that's, a huge thing. Yeah. Whether it be, Chase Utley.
Vague rumors of Chase Utley were impressive. He fits right into this team as a... really talented second baseman who can do a whole lot that we can throw a lot at the end and have him suddenly break down.
Yeah. Or Murphy from the Mets.
Absolutely the Giants way. Murphy on the other hand, sort of the end of the Giants Ray Durham tenure as opposed to the beginning of the Giants Ray Durham tenure.
Sure.
There's not a lot of what are you going to, you can't go after Ian Kinsler right now or something. And quite frankly, that smacks too much of Carlos Beltran. This is a team that's done really well when you've had just that one piece that they needed. And Chase Utley leans towards the more blockbustery side of that, but still current Chase Utley falls along those lines. He's, when he is on, which this season has been a fair amount of the time, he is devastating.
Yeah.
Murphy, on the other hand, when he is on, which is not a whole lot of the time, he is devastating. But Murphy spends more of his time off than on and is good enough that he fits in. You know, he's, in my mind, Murphy is more of a stronger hitting Thério Fontenot prototype for how the way that this team sort of like, as far as how they fit into this team, role player that is competent, that can hit better than the options that we have there now. You know, Murphy is a guy that would come in, that would play defense okay, at least if not better, and that's going to hit better than Brandon Hicks.
Yep.
And unless Panik is going to turn into that, which the way from what we've seen down the line in a year or two, maybe he does, and having this big league start now, maybe it helps. But, you know, Murphy's not Chase Utley. He's not going to come in and suddenly start Marco Scudero spraying lines all over the place with a few extra home runs for good measure. You know, Chase Utley is healthy. Chase Utley is kind of like taking the things that we like about Marco Scudero, the things that we like about Brandon Hicks, putting them together, taking out a bunch of the bad parts, aging them a little, and giving them bad knees. You know, it's, I mean, that's Chase Utley takes a lot of the things we really want with sort of the same level of injury risk that we already have with our second baseman. But the Phillies are going to ask a lot for him because he is Chase Utley.
Yeah.
You know, you're until recently, your next stops behind him were Freddie Galvis. I mean, it's they're doing a little better, but Ruben Amaro has kind of destroyed a lot of that organization, and getting rid of Chase Utley right now, he has a lot more value to the Phillies than he does to the Giants.
Yeah.
So that's a dangerous one. Murphy, on the other hand, not necessarily as dangerous.
I think Murphy is probably someone that is going to require less collateral. And I think Ken just fits the Giants persona a little bit better than Utley.
Yeah.
What is curious to me, though, is that there was all this talk earlier about, you know, Jeff Smarja from the Cubs.
And yeah, I don't really.
The thing is that you look at the starting rotation.
It's not really the problem.
Yeah.
It's because all the guys that we were saying were starting to have consistently problems on the last show, some of them are cleaning that up. Vogelsong has looked pretty passable for the most part. Hudson has had a couple of
ERA than Kane and Lincecum.
True. And Kane has put some things together. Lincecum just threw a no-hitter and looked pretty good doing it. Yeah, Padres
kind of
are no.
We didn't mention that this year or this podcast, by the way.
It's been so bleak. We aren't even talking about a no-hitter.
Here's how bad it's been for the Giants.
Ladies and gentlemen, they
won one game this week. Not only have we not talked about Lincecum's no-hitter until now, we're talking about if he would be removed as a starter.
Sure.
But secondly, the National League named him as the NL Player of the Week in the only game the Giants won. Thank you very much. So
it's just that good.
It's just that good. But yeah, you have this guy coming around, maybe. Kane obviously had a great start. Vogelsong, other than his first three starts of the year, has actually been remarkably consistent. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have Hudson and Bumgarner doing their thing. So if you were just magically handed Samardzija, even for free... I mean,
Where does he go?
I mean,
at that point, Samardzija almost like it's either Samardzija or Vogelsong moves to the bullpen.
Yeah, they're not moving Lincecum earning $20 million. They're not moving Kane earning $20 million.
And the thing is, you don't
Vogelsong, who is third in ERA on the team right now.
Well, and Wendy Thur made a really good point. The reason you don't move Lincecum is because of things like that.
Yes.
Because that's still there.
Yes.
And when he can capture that, when he gets that lightning into a admittedly very differently sized bottle nowadays, you get that. And the $20 million isn't necessarily worth it, but moving him to the bullpen isn't worth losing the chance of that either.
No.
Because when he is on, you're getting 5, 6, 7 innings out of him being devastating. Yeah, I like that word. I'm using it a lot today. I'm not sorry.
No, but
devastating.
You know, they still have, another month? The trading deadline is July 31st, I guess.
Sure, and I mean, you know, there are still some pieces like potentially Daniel Murphy
could lay three or four eggs in a row, right? And their ERA could balloon well over 5, and then they pull the trigger right before the end of the month. That's the person
that
can replace
just about anybody. It's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hudson, it looked like it was starting to happen too, but last night he actually
started to turn things around.
Calmed down quite a bit. He got the loss, but he only allowed 2 runs in 8 innings. So
he got Kane.
Pretty good. He got Kane. Kane got Kane not only by the offense, but by the closer.
For a minute there, too.
I know. He was sitting in the dugout probably wanting to throw something.
Are we talking about the move to closer by committee?
on my way home from the game, you know, I had not had a drop of alcohol. I was driving.
Yeah, no, I was actually afraid to listen to that one because I was like, oh, this one's going to be a rough one.
And was definitely F-bomb central and no holds barred. I let it fly. I was very, very angry. Just letting my emotions get the better of me for the horrific month that they've had, the last 3 weeks they've had.
Do we call that a bonus-ode? Because I can't decide whether that's a bonus or not.
I did call it a bonus-ode.
It is a bonus-ode, but is it a bonus is the question.
It's not really a bonus. It's a minus-ode or something. I don't know.
It's right. It's more of an onus-ode, if you will.
Yeah, the onus is on me to shut the hell up.
Nah. You know, because the thing is...
But the good thing is...
You were articulating what a lot of people were feeling, though.
So it's very short, at least. This podcast, but
you're articulating what a lot of people were feeling though, and I think a lot of that has been directed at Romo lately. And now, you know, Romo had a couple of eggs that he laid, and he does that every year. And he'll give up a couple of home runs, and he'll do that every year. I mean, a guy who's that dependent on the sliders,
closer blows a couple of games a year in horrific.
Yeah,
fashion.
With I think there's like. Brad Lidge is pretty much the only exception that 1 year, but he made up for that in the next like three. So like threefold.
Yeah.
But the thing is with Romo at first, you're saying, okay, well, it's not that big of a deal. But when he starts stringing these together, you say, how long are you going to let the string run out? And I think partly because he has been off on his command a little bit. I think we can all kind of safely say, you know what, when you groove a hanging slider twice to Brandon Phillips, you're off on your command a little bit.
Yeah.
But also that I think Bochy, as much as anyone else, saw the need to have a little bit of a goat and to try and push the rest of the team around and, quite frankly, take advantage of the guys that are pitching really well right now. If Romo turns into one of the best seventh inning guys you've ever seen, okay, great, because we can use that too. But... you've got guys like Affelt, like Casilla most of the time, like Machi, absolutely, who have been so incredibly solid. Affelt and Casilla have been here before and have done this. You move Machi into the eighth inning. I mean, you're doing what's best with the team that you have. And if you had to wait until Romo just kind of laid a couple of eggs to do it, well, you're still doing the right thing, I think. I mean, that's because when you do it like this, when you do it by not, you know, by demoting Romo, but not by kicking him out, by keeping a pitcher who is clearly of value to your org around, you have the option of changing your mind later. But you're taking the action you need in the short term. And I think, at least the way he's pitching right now, I hope Romo's pissed about it. I want him to do something about it, and I want him to be pissed about it so that, you know, he really goes after trying to get that undone. But they're doing what's right for the team right now, and I think Romo, as much as anybody else, is going to say, if we do this, maybe we win more games, and we need that.
I think when it happened, I mean, he came out, and I tweeted out, I don't feel so good about this because, of course, his recent track record, and I'm sure everybody Agreed. Else was feeling the same thing.
Agreed.
When he blew the save, it was the realization that he had – that was literally the 81st game of the year.
Yeah.
Halfway through the season.
Right.
And he has blown five saves. And his ERA is over
five.
And I
mean, before the last, like, 2 weeks, it's been, like, what, two?
Yeah. It was that, yeah, because he blew three out of the last five. So, and he's blown five total. So he had two coming into that Colorado game that we attended. Mm-hmm. But three out of the last five, with two of those saves being very, very trepidatious and close to being blown saves.
Right.
His whip, his ERA, his batting average against, everything has been just way off the charts bad. In fact, this year already, through half a season, he's given up six home runs, which is matches his career high for a season. So he's already at least doubled his home run allowed count. Five of those six were off of sliders. And in those five sliders, it took only 244 sliders to get to five home runs this year. Whereas the previous, I think it was 3 years or whatever, it was like 2,200 sliders to get to five home runs. There's something off with him right now. He is not, he's not even effectively wild. He is non-effectively wild. He is missing in very, very bad spots. And I think, you know, I tweeted out after the game, that's five blown saves through half a season. Clearly, Bochy will never even let it get close to 10. I think the change needs to come now. And after the game, it was Bags who said, is it time for a timeout for Romo? And after the Colorado game, that same question was asked. And he said, no, absolutely not. He's our guy. He's done so much for us. It's just a bump of the road. He's going to be fine. That night, because he had just literally come in the dugout, come in the press conference, he said, I can't talk about that right now. I'm not going to talk about it right now. The game just ended. But it is something that I'm going to discuss with the coaches and the players. And immediately you realize the door was open. Because then he started going on again with, he's done so much for us and he's a reliable guy. He buttered him up a little bit. But the fact that he said, I'm going to talk to the players and talk to the coaches tomorrow. Right.
We're not into absolutely not. Yeah, we're now into I'm mentioning a territory. And sure enough, the next day
literally
is when we heard about this.
Yeah. He had.
Yeah.
Talked to his coaches and then went to Romo. I
already talked to Romo.
And he said, this is the way it's going to be. We're going to go by committee. We still need you. We need you in the seventh. We need you in the eighth. And maybe you'll be back in there, basically.
And honestly, you know, Romo can get back into that mix if he shows off well.
Yeah, because he starts throwing a couple of seven and eighth innings of just 1-2-3 and a lot of strikeouts, and he's throwing.
Yeah, and you know, we know this team too, and we know these guys, and these guys are not always going to be on. I mean, Casillo is just as likely as anybody else to start flubbing up things, even though.
Which he's done before.
He has done it before, but he's also had really good sparkling stretches before.
Yeah.
He just because he doesn't inspire the same confidence doesn't mean you can't look at it. And, yeah. Right. No, but, you know, things come up. For all we know, something has come up with Romo.
So
I hope not.
So what's interesting really to not, me but, is he said it's going to be closer by committee. And basically, if in the ninth inning, let's say two out of three guys are left-handers, he's going to throw an Affelt. And if two out of three are right-handers, he's going to throw in Casilla.
Right.
I don't know if I agree with that. And my question to you is, do you think it's okay to do that committee thing with Affelt and Casilla, or would you just choose Casilla or whomever else?
You know, okay. So I see this as two ways. On the one hand, I'm actually a really strong proponent of pitch your best guys when you need them.
Yeah.
So I personally like the bullpen by committee approach.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not, especially for a player's manager, that's not a realistic thing to look for. So the way that it's happened in the past has always been we said closer by committee and it evolves into a particular guy being a closer. Almost every team does that at some point when they use the phrase closer by committee. Almost nobody actually does closer by committee for an entire season.
Yeah.
You get surprises. It's really rare. In almost every situation, there will be somebody who will jump up and seize that closer role. My personal guess, it's probably going to be Santiago Casilla.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I'm not against switching it up sometimes, but I don't know if I'm strictly with switching it based on matchups, because it's really going to depend. Having another lefty around has actually changed our flexibility a lot, because it allows us to use Javier Lopez marginally earlier in games if we're in a high leverage sitch, mm-hmm. or if we're in a place where we need to get some mileage, we can try to use Affelt instead. The problem is you don't have enough other lefties at this time to have that flexibility if you're trying to reserve Affelt for the ninth. So I think it's my personal approach becomes 7th, 8th, 9th, I have four guys that I can mix in that situation,
sure.
not counting Javier Lopez, with Javier Lopez to fall back on. Mm-hmm. If I start having to use those guys 4th, 5th, 6th, okay. But, you know, in my mind, right now, Juan Gutierrez never enters that discussion.
No, I agree. I agree. Not
use Mero Petit.
JC Gutierrez.
JC Gutierrez. And use Mero Petit never enters that discussion.
No, he's spot starter long relief. Yeah.
He's a spot starter. He's long relief. And if he hasn't been aired out in a while and you're in a situation where you can use him and it's moderate leverage, he has shown that he can handle those situations. Sure. He's great as a break glass in case of we need a Petit guy. But the thing is, when you look up and down the rest of the bullpen, you have Sergio Romo, you've got Jeremy Affelt, Santiago Casilla, Javier Lopez, Gene Machi. You put those five names on a board for almost anybody who's watched the Giants for the last 4 years right now and say, this is your 7th, 8th, 9th inning crew. And they go, great. We're in really good shape.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, I would say you approach that with those guys. You say 7th, 8th, 9th inning, I have five guys available to me that I can theoretically use, assuming I'm not worried I'll need them later. You know, let's say that I pick three of those. I don't necessarily pick the same three every time.
Sure.
If I have Joey Votto coming up, and, you know, he's going to be the third out, and we've got two outs, and, you know, it's like two outs and a walk, and here comes Joey Votto, I'm going to Javier Lopez in the 7th. Two outs, a walk, Joey Votto, I used Lopez in the 7th, we get into the 8th, and I've pulled Lopez for somebody else, and then they offer, you know, I go to Affelt if there's a lefty coming up. I don't care that it's the 8th. Even if I have other lefties coming up, maybe I run Affelt into the 9th, maybe I pull Casilla into the 9th, maybe I have Affelt take one batter for a lefty and then switch in Casilla. But, you know, if you're looking at it that way, this is a bullpen that if you're playing your matchups and if you're playing them well, you can use, like, all five of those guys can close.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Romo when he's on can close. Let's rephrase that. But when Romo's when he's on can close, Javier Lopez can theoretically close, except that he's been, you know, really iffy against righties.
Sure.
But the remainder, Machi, Casilla, Affelt, they've all looked really good against both sides of the plate.
So one statistic a lot of reporters keep pointing out is that Romo's allowed 15 runs in his last 15 innings pitched. And yep. It makes it sound like it's this huge and consistent stretch. But, I mean, it's very episodic. You know, the game that we went to Colorado was 5 runs in like a third of an inning.
Right.
The other night
it's
2
it's
runs
been reverse
in an
streaky,
inning.
So to speak.
The other one, it was 3 runs in a half an inning. So it's like, okay, it might be 15 and 15, but, you know, it's like 7 of those 15 were perfect, or at least no runs.
Or at least no runs, yeah. Right.
And before that Colorado series, where he had only had 2 blown saves so far, his ERA was still under 3, and he was whatever in the league lead of for saves. He was considered an all-star at that point. And or at least a very good shot at being selected. And what's amazing to me is how quickly things have changed for him. You know, not just the All-Star game. Quick, granted, he's obviously not going to be on the All-Star team, but to see his ERA more than double, it's now above 5. To have 5 blown saves, to have, you know, his batting average against go up, and all these other things like that. I'm really. Just from a personal point of view, not just a fan point of view, but a personal point of view, I really like the guy. You know,
yeah.
we've been able to talk to him, and he is as nice as he appears when he's interviewed or in commercials or
absolutely
on KNBR or whatever. He really is a very down-to-earth guy. He considers himself so lucky to be where he is because he's always been the small guy, the guy who is never going to make it, the guy who doesn't have enough stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and he's used nothing but heart to make it to where he is.
Right.
And he's very honest about all that. He doesn't hide anything. It's not a Houdini right. act.
And, well, you know, I'm not at all convinced that Romo has lost it.
No,
you know?
No, no. I'm right. not saying that. I'm just
right. I agree, but
I absolutely think he could get it back because how many closers in this game have had these horrible stretches where they get removed as closer, but then they come back? I mean, it's happened so many times. What I'm worried about though is that he's a free agent after this year, and here's the irony: I think if Romo had his, you know, typical / all-star year. And he had, you know, 40, 45 saves this year, regardless if they won got in the playoffs or not. And had a, you know, 2.5 ERA and just kind of those normal stats. And how long he's been in the league and how long he's done this, he would have commanded a very hefty sum next year. And I don't know if the Giants would have committed to that because of
right.
everything else that they've committed to.
Right. But you look at it now and you see the
irony
price getting
is
driven
exactly
down.
Him being yeah. removed as closer, number one, being first and foremost, and number two, his stats being inflated, if he doesn't regain either the closer's role or his stats don't come back down to earth, his value is completely hurt on the free agent market.
And it's completely different.
And he's not going to be necessarily pursued as a closer by other teams, although he could be in fairness, and it would just be a cheaper,
yeah. I mean, some team could suddenly decide on second thought, you know what, Sergio Romo is a good option, and we think there's still something in that tank, which undoubtedly
we had
a triple A
closing
is.
For us, you know, last or this year, and so we need someone who's done it before in the playoffs and all that. So
sure, or you know, you run into a team like the White Sox, which are running on Ronald Belisario right now, and you see what your other prospects are out there. But Romo really is it is in his hands right now, pun aside, whether or not also the ball is in his court, pun aside, whether or not he wants to really make his case and whether he's able to really make his case for free agency. Well, that's kind of up to him. You know, the Giants have been known to get people at a marginal hometown discount because they like this team, and Romo seems like the type to do that. And at the same time, this is going to be his first time reaching potential free agency.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's going to depend on how this season plays out.
So I think that, you know, if he doesn't recover as though we all hope he does, it's possible that the Giants might actually have a higher percentage chance of actually re-signing him.
Of keeping him at a reasonable rate.
Yeah. It's good. No, and then, you know, by then maybe he could come back to where he was in the past. You know, maybe he just had one off year or half of an off year. Anyway, just something very interesting to consider, because if they don't re-sign Romo and, you know, Casilla, I'm not saying he's not the closer of the future, but even if he had a good second half as a closer, if that's who they go with, it doesn't mean they're going to sign him and he's going to be their closer for 3 years. It could be someone they're looking at in the September call-up, you know, looking at Heath Hembree and these other guys that, you know, just might be ready to take the torch as closer. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's way too early to be seen, but interesting to think about. All right. So I think we've covered pretty much everything we wanted to.
I think we've covered everything we really feel like covering for the most part.
For the most part, the no-hitter and everything.
Right.
You wanted to talk about Pensel Lincecum cheering on the U.S. men's national team.
Oh, you know, I mean, I thought that was fun. Besides the fact that Lincecum, after his wonderful no-hitter that I thoroughly enjoyed, and I did it. I will admit, I listened to the last two innings while I was at work. I told everybody that I knew I was the least useful person at work for those three innings.
Yes.
Although at least I feel like I made up for it the rest of the day, but because I was super excited, running everywhere trying to get stuff done. But it was just like those three innings hit, and I was just like, nope, sorry. You better have a really good reason for needing me right now. You do? Fine. Okay, I'll come back. Took my break just in time for the last out.
Well, I had
it was nuts.
I think it was in the bottom of the seventh, the top of the seventh when there was a couple outs. I finally tuned in. I have Dish Network with the DVR that's hooked up to the internet, has Sling built in and all that.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, and so I dialed in at work to watch the game through Comcast, and a buddy came in the ninth inning. And he was like, blah, blah, blah. And I was talking to him, keeping an eye on the game. You know, there's one out, blah, blah, blah. And then there's two outs. And I finally said, dude, shut up. I need to watch this. And he's like, what? What's going on? And he's not a baseball fan whatsoever. Very cultured man. And I thought he would know a little bit more about baseball than he did.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens.
Sports have a very relative value per person.
And he'd heard of Tim.
Very subjective.
And sure. I said, oh, my God, he's got one more out to get a no-hitter. Oh, my God, this is like, I'm totally freaking out right now.
Right.
No pun intended.
I definitely.
And so he's like, oh, that's pretty cool, man. Oh, I'll watch. And so he stood there and crossed his arms and we were watching. And then when he pulled that ground ball to Panic for the final out, right when the guy hit the ball and it was heading towards Panic, my buddy goes, oh, that's too bad. And then he throws the guy out and he continues with the whole, oh, that's such a shame, even though all the players are celebrating at this point.
Meaning he didn't.
And I
didn't
looked
get
at
it?
Him and I was like, I did the fist pump and the clap and the whole like, yes, my God, he did it. Number two. I was like, wait, he got the no hitter, man. He's all, he did. I was like, yeah, do you see the fans or the players doing that thing?
Didn't understand what is or isn't a hit. The ball was on the ground.
Yeah. And
it
he's
must
like,
have been a hit.
He's like, but the guy hit it. And I was like, and I thought it was a joke. I thought he was joking. And I was like, yeah, he hit it to the second baseman who threw him out. And he's like, yeah, but he hit the ball. That's not a no hitter.
It's semantics. It's one of those things, though, that kind of reminds
know
you,
where
you
to
know,
start on this one, dude.
The sport that we enjoy is actually a little bit more complex than I think even we give it credit for at this point.
I thought
sometimes,
back to
so
the, this, like you said, the semantics, and I'm like a no hitter, meaning
indeed,
you do not.
No
hit
one
the
has
ball.
Hit a thing. And strike out 27 people.
And I chuckled and I said, Paul, in the whatever 500,000 Major League Baseball games that have ever occurred, that has not and will never happen. It's impossible. He's like, well, what do you mean?
For one guy to strike out 27 batters in a row,
you have to strike out every single out. You have to. You could walk a couple guys,
sure,
but you could hit a couple guys, I guess, theoretically,
also possible.
But you not a single person could fly out
and even make
or
contact.
Ground out. Yeah, no contact except foul balls, right? No fair contact.
And your arm would fall off.
And he's like, that's never happened. It's like, well, what's the major league record? 20 strikeouts, right? 21 strikeouts.
Gary Wood.
And
is it? Would it be? It would, I mean, the modern era probably Gary Wood 20 Ks.
Yeah, and that's not during a no hitter perfect game. That's just
no. That was just one of the most ridiculous strikeout performances we've ever seen. But
and I'm like, no, Paul. No hitter means and I explained it to him, and he was like, oh, he's like, well, that doesn't seem that amazing. I was like, all right, well. I'll see you.
You
later.
Know, you just kind of like. Anyway, have a good day, man.
Yeah. At that point, you're just like, yep, yeah, okay, yeah. We'll
cool.
We'll just,
have a good day, man. I'll see you later.
We'll talk about beer later.
Right.
Yeah. He's a good.
I'm gonna just close the door on you and wave respectfully, and then run around my room, my office, screaming.
You know, brain surgery is not hard. A lung transplant. I mean, come on, that's not that difficult. You just take one lung out, you put it in the other. What's the big deal?
It just needs to fit in like roughly the same place, and then connect all the things back up. Right? It's like replacing your hard drive.
It's a bunch of tubes. You just stitch them together. It's like whatever. So
what's
anyway,
the big deal?
I got a kick out of that. so yeah, he was named National League Player of the Week. For our only win. So tweet at me, bruh. The only thing that I came up with, I tried, we've done this a couple of times where we try to get some of our listeners into the mix, and I was kind of going off that
night. I think that night that you really went at it, a lot of people really, that resonated with a lot of people.
It actually did resonate with a lot of people.
That frustration, and that's part of the reason that we kind of point out that, you know, when we're there, like this is a podcast by fans. We've never tried to hide that part.
By and for fans of the San Francisco Giants.
It is certainly for fans as well.
An objective media entity writing for the Chronicle.
Not with you and Willie behind the wheel of the Twitter account. Absolutely. It gets very interesting sometimes. And, you know, that was one of those times, though. It was a really good point. It's just we really, like, that all just got laid out there, you know. I wasn't able to watch that game.
Yeah,
but no, the things that I was reading, I was just like, oh, they did what? They did what happened? Oh, that what? And just it was such a roller coaster of a game that, like, by the time it hit the end, like I can only imagine. Like it just, all of Giants Twitter was just having various forms of like meltdown, resignation, anger, like lack of understanding, bewilderment, and just everything.
Yeah,
and
it all hit really hard. That many tweets come across the board from very respectable people, people who are usually pretty calm, completely just calling
flying off the handle.
Bochy out. I mean, just
reasonably flying off the handle.
Yeah, reasonably. And I usually don't go that crazy with the TortureCast account, but I did. I was like, this is bullshit. I mean, I cannot believe what Bochy's doing here. And no one, not a single person said, well, you know, think of it from this point of view, or
maybe if
no
only one we rebutted. I mean, and, come on, guys. Obviously, the, you know, everybody always has to panic right away. Yeah. No. Everybody said, you know what? You're right. That's ridiculous.
We got a lot of positive tweets, but probably the best one I thought that summed it up was from The Real Thing at MaxDink420. Mm-hmm. So we know what he does for a living. TortureCast.
Waits for April to come around once a year. Yeah.
Pretty much. You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
At a certain time in the afternoon. Props on speaking the truth tonight. You're the only media member I've seen all night who called it for what it is, indefensible. And that was I was saying that his call to get Arias in for Crawford was indefensible. I don't care if, and this is my personal opinion, he says, I felt like it was a gut feeling that Arias was going to have a better shot than Crawford. It's indefensible. It really is. I mean, there's nothing in the numbers that you can point to that says that. So you could say, yeah, the guy who's never had a major league at bat, has never played baseball, maybe will run into one over a guy who's played baseball before. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like, what the hell are you talking about, Bochy?
It's like the theory is there, and it doesn't make any sense to anybody who kind of knows how
right? Like any dog can have his day. It's just like, you know, betting on snake eyes and craps. It's like, well, that's a dumb bet. But, you know, you could be right once in a blue moon. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't mean it's a right call. So, anyway, that was that. So, so our new favorite guy, Ben, you want to lead off?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and actually, I'm going to pick him because I always enjoy these stories. It's been nice seeing him come up, and he's held his own, if not looked, you know, like our savior at second. But Joe Panic, I'm going to go with Joe. I've had fun watching him come up and be super excited to be in the dugout, and you know, he's playing well enough for what we have expected of him, because no one thought he was going to come up and rake. But at the same time, like he's come up and he's showed himself to be decent at second defense wise. And every so often he's hopefully going to start running into a few more, but he's just, you know, he's been doing a good job, and he's our new guy. So I figure he makes a good new favorite guy.
Yeah. I think that's a good pick. I have not been disappointed by him. We'll see, you know, how the next month.
Oh, he's, goes, I mean, but everybody else has had ample opportunities to disappoint us. I figure if we give him a few more, something will come up, but
yeah.
Maybe not too soon, Joe. Yeah,
yeah. He had a couple of hits that night, so that was actually pretty good.
Worth looking at. That was his first one at AT&T Park,
it
right?
It was his first hit of the day. Was the first hit at AT&T Park, and then later he had another one. So it was nice to see.
Good for him.
So I'm going to go with Brandon Belt, who of course is rehabbing his broken thumb, and it's kind of interesting. You wonder. I mean, Brandon Belt, obviously they were playing really, really well for actually most. Well, I guess about half now of the duration of his absence. And so I'm not going to say that the Giants would not have been better without him, but I think they would have been better in the last 3 weeks if they had had him in the lineup, clearly.
Sure.
But they didn't miss him the first 3 weeks of his absence. They were on that ridiculous tear. But anyway, he was...
Right, and you know, Tyler Colvin suddenly turned into the next coming of Babe Ruth for a little while. And No, I totally get it.
Yeah, yeah. They just seem to be making up for his absence in weird ways and weird wins and, you know, just different performances. And I think that luck ran out, to be honest. I do think it was a little bit of timing, a little bit of luck, a little bit of something there. But
riding a couple of streaks. Yeah, absolutely. But it's something that you can't afford to do the entire time.
And I think we're getting to the point. You need to have a guy who can hit.
You need someone who's good, who has the ability consistently. Runs, yeah.
You know, he was, second in the NL in home runs when he went on the DL, so...
Yeah, and it's nice to see at least in his rehab starts so far that he's at least maintaining some of that, including at AAA, where at least the pitching gets closer to major league level.
Yeah,
so I mean, he's you know, none of them are incredible. Chapman, but he's, you know, you get a lot of flamethrowers who don't necessarily have the command, or you get a lot of control guys who don't necessarily have the speed in AAA, and I mean, that's a lot closer to what you're going to get at the big league level, so he still looked good against them. That's
so
nice.
His first rehab game was in San Jose. I think it was on Wednesday night or so. And
first at bat.
Yeah, so he was in the dugout, and there was a cancer survivor. And she's gone through like 37 sessions of chemo and radiation. Mm-hmm. And I think she's 12 or 13 years old. And she threw out the first pitch for the night. And Brandon, for some reason, kind of just took some sort of gaze at her and was just kind of felt this, I guess, bond or something. And when she was walking off the mound and they were coming out to take on the field in the bottom of the, or the top of the first, he went up to her and said, "I'm going to hit a home run for you tonight." And by her own admission, she was like, "Okay, yeah, well, thanks, cool. That this is really amazing." Because she was actually more giddy about meeting Brandon Belt, you know.
Understandable.
Rather
Can
than
you blame her?
Focusing on what he said. So she didn't really think about it. But there, her mom was there, a Giants PR person was there, a couple of the people were there, and they all overheard this saying, "I'm going to hit a home run for you." So, of course, he comes up in the bottom of the first and rakes one into the parking lot over the right field wall. And someone actually did go out and retrieve the ball, and everybody started talking to her, going, "Oh my God, he really did it! He really did it!" And she's like, "Oh my God, that's right, he did." And so it was just a real touching thing that Brandon Belt, you know, made a promise.
It's very Brandon Belt in a way, though.
It is
to like just say something that doesn't always make a lot of sense, that isn't necessarily going to work out, and then suddenly be like, "No, you nailed that." Actually,
yeah. Yeah, in the first at bat, right?
You did it.
Like the later in the game.
Right. So like, let's wait and see. Oh, no. The tension rises. Is he going to boom? No. Yeah. Nope. Okay.
Yep.
That ball's gone.
So she got the ball, and they talked a little bit afterwards. And it's just been this really nice story. And now, when he comes off the DL, I guess he's going to have her family as his guest come to a game at AT&T Park. So
worked out well so far.
That's really, really, if I were him, I wouldn't promise another one.
No, but that does that, you just that ride fits the, belt the though. That, yeah, right. Just run with it, man.
And if he does hit home run and doesn't promise it, no one's going to think none the wiser. I just think that, you know, we've talked to him before, and he, the media says, and I agree, he's a genuine guy. He is just this big dopey. You know, not
very like
stupid. I don't mean it in that way.
No.
I just mean
like
the way he
carries himself.
Exactly.
And sort of presents
He's not
himself.
A dumb man. He's actually very smart. But just the way he kind of walks and talks and kind of is like a very goofy guy, but very genuine. It's who he is. He doesn't pretend to be anyone else in front of the media or clearly fans or anyone else. Certainly his teammates. Bochy's gone on about him before, and other players as well. And I don't know. I just think it's really, really cool in the time of this amazing, horrific slump the Giants have been facing to have these little stories that are just kind of nice for a distraction. So, new favorite guy, Brandon Belt, even though he hasn't played in 6 weeks.
Yeah, you know what? I don't see any reason why we need to put rules on this. I'm actually going to go ahead and give an honorary mention. Wow, words to Hunter
Pence.
Oh yeah,
we didn't talk about this part either. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is cool though. Hunter Pence has started streaming on Twitch. Anybody who came to our podcast from hearing our absent co-chair on the instance on the Angry Chicken, so it's really cool because Hunter has always said that he enjoys gaming, and it's kind of cool for two reasons that he started doing Twitch, because not just because he's an interesting guy and because he's playing games and that's kind of fun to get to see, but also because once in a while he'll drop little things. For example, did you know that Michael Morse's nickname is actually Cobra?
I had heard that, yes.
Or, or Mercy.
No, not Mercy.
Both of those things.
Mercy.
So now I want to start, this is all according to Hunter Pence, who is sometimes an unreliable narrator, but... this is all Pence on his account. Just, this stuff just came up, you know, Buster games, maybe a little bit, but not really. Tim plays FIFA, but he doesn't really like to game. Like he would never do that. He likes his privacy. He would never do a Twitch thing.
Yeah, he likes his privacy. I remember that.
Morse doesn't game a lot. You know, a couple of the guys do here and there. But it's, you know, somebody at one point was like, would you play MLB against Puig again? He was like, hell no.
He said, hell no. Like, yeah, he doesn't like MLB.
No, he doesn't like MLB that much. And I mean, honestly, he'd rather have something where he understands the controls. And when you actually do the thing, understanding the controls is a little different.
Yeah.
By the way, I can't play Dance Dance Revolution.
Yep, me neither.
So You know, and it's like, it's,
and you're a dancer, you know, so there you go.
Right. Now let's have you play Echo the Dolphin. So it's just like,
good point.
It's like that's it's really cool getting to see that side, though, because one of the things that we love about Hunter Pence is that he's weird, and he's consistently weird, and he's going to be interestingly weird all the time.
Well, I just found it fascinating. I didn't see his stream today. I saw that, you know, he was on Hearthstone.
He was playing Hearthstone, so I remember I texted both of you in all caps, mostly for Willie.
Yeah, and I wanted to go watch, but
I wanted to. My brother's watched a little bit. Apparently, he likes playing as a hunter, obviously.
Oh, well, there you go. Willie must be just over Cloud Nine.
Hunter playing as a hunter?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah,
hunter, but he was playing playing Shaman for that one.
He was. Okay.
For those of you that understand and know Hearthstone, you'll get this. And for those of you that don't, anyway, Hunter Pence is awesome.
Yeah.
So that's what we're really getting out of this. But yeah, I mean,
was he streaming from Twitch or was he streaming from his own place this time?
Based on the layout, it looked like it was from Twitch or something along those lines.
It
but
was
I'm not
again. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Because the
not
first
sure.
time he streamed was last week. And that was pretty epic to watch because the Twitch guys, you know, hooked him up and he was on PS4 and he was playing Gods Among Us, which I haven't played before, but it's kind of
I've wanted to for a while, but
Mortal Kombat type
in the PS4.
You know, DC universe, I guess. But it was really, really cool to see him, you know, going, "Hey man, I'm just waiting for someone to play."
And interacting with fans, handing out his gamer tags online.
Yeah,
just like,
and everybody was
cool.
Following him and becoming, and he was accepting all the friend requests, but like no one had the game.
Right.
And it
no
was
one
hilarious
had Injustice.
Because for like 10 minutes,
I was texting my friends that had Injustice,
anyone?
You know.
Come on.
My buddy Anthony was, he liked
I'm
going
to go out to
the Phillies
Best Buy or Walmart right now and buy a PS4. Come back, hook it up, and I would probably be able to play with him.
Right. It was funny. It was great though, and I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch. He switched over to Killer Instinct for a bit. I mean, he's a fighter game guy for the most part.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
likes WoW
Instinct
and a lot of the Blizzard suite of games. But you know, it's fun to watch. It's just fun to watch.
Well,
because
I think
he's doing
really
it his
cool.
own way too. Like people will send him requests, and you know, some Twitch channels will be like, "All right, yeah, let's do that. That'll be fun." He's like,
"You know,
you can
cool.
watch this."
The gaming,
and it's not like he's definitely. He's pretty good.
Oh no, he's definitely
with the characters that he knows. He's pretty good, and he chooses to stick to the characters that he knows, which is fine. You know,
yeah,
Pence
and he
type
admits
that wants to do what he wants to do, and he said,
"Yeah, he likes Green Arrow.
I'm not playing Superman because I'm not good at Superman. Yeah. You can pick from one of these characters, and that I think it reflects a lot on how we see Pence as a player. He's the same dude. You put him in front of a PlayStation, and he's still going at 100%." All the time.
100%.
And it's so much fun to watch. We may get the link up in the show notes, but twitch.tv/HunterPence, one word, much like his Twitter account, just twitch.tv/HunterPence.
Oh, so fascinating.
Check it out. It's an interesting
gaming was cool.
Don't get me wrong,
but it was what I found more fascinating was in between games.
Oh man.
When he was answering questions from the chat room, which was fantastic. It was
right
the first time
that's where we heard about some of the things like, you know, Cobra and Mercy.
The first time he streamed was right after Lincecum's no hitter that night.
Yep.
And
he was so excited. He was talking about that,
And how it felt being on the outfield.
How's it feel to be in a no hitter? He said, you know, I think it probably feels kind of like it does for all the fans. Like you guys felt that.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, that's a good point. I mean, I've never gotten to watch a no hitter in person.
Yeah.
But I like when I've gotten to watch it on TV and stuff like that, like there's that tension in the air. And I was like, you know what? It's probably the same thing, except for the knowledge that if you screw up, it's on you.
Yeah, it's on you.
It's not on the dude in, you know, like Bleachers 143. It's on you. But besides that, you know, like I imagine that the excitement that's just is palpable. It's just the same thing.
But then it was later, you know, you hear the Twitch people going, "Hey, Hunter, we're going to order pizza." You know, and he's like, "It's got to be gluten-free, man." You know,
gets kale on it.
Yeah, and literally, it was gluten-free kale pizza. And later, when it came, he's
just
like
going ham on
it. He ate like freaking 6 pieces of it. You know, he's like, "Man, this stuff is delicious. It's amazing," and all that. Now, I will share a little anecdote with Hunter Pence. So that game against Colorado that we went to, I was there early for batting practice, and Hunter Pence, of course, is. You know, my body is my temple. You know, he's kale, not vegan, right. But he's close
paleo, sure.
And
very careful of what he takes.
Yeah.
Very careful of what he takes.
He's
in.
Like 2% right, body fat. You know, no alcohol, all these things. Actually, right. That's not true. By the way, he's been purported to be quite a heavy partier and drinker when the off season is here. But
fair enough.
So and that's fine. So that day, I was watching BP, and Hunter Pence was jogging by, and this guy to my left started going, "Hunter, Hunter, hey Hunter, 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 Hunter," and Hunter turned around, and the dude says, and he, by the way, he's wearing a cutoff button-up shirt and a straw hat.
Hunter and is or the dude?
The dude.
Okay.
He looked like he's straight out from the Appalachians.
Sure.
And so he's like, "What's that website?" And Hunter says his website. And I'm like, "Well, what is that?" And he's like, "Oh, it's for his chewing tobacco." And I think we all know that he does tobacco, of course. He dips and everything. But
right.
It was just kind of being reminded of that. And then after Hunter took a round in the batting cage, he came back over to us. And so he's standing right in front of me, looking at this dude. He opens it. He reaches his pocket, opens up this can of dip, these pouches. And I get hit by this immediate smell of coffee. And mm-hmm. I'm like, "What the heck is that? Is that coffee tobacco?" And he looks at me and he goes, "Yeah, mocha tobacco. It's my favorite." I was like, "Okay." So anyway, he offered this guy these pouch dips. And so the guy took three of them and he's like, "Hey, thanks, man. No problem." And he's like, "Yeah, no problem, man." So he takes off. So Hunter Pence apparently is okay with dishing out his paraphernalia to random people. Mm-hmm. And what was really funny is this guy actually was a cameraman for Fox Sports. And he's like, "So is Pence big around here?" Kind of did one of those. He's kind of big.
It was like, here. Does not pay attention.
Yeah, so yeah. It'd be like if, you know, I went to go be a cameraman for the NHL or MLS or something, right? I'd be like, "I don't know any of these players." So
right.
That's kind of the situation.
Who's this? So this Wondolowski kid, kind of a big deal or whatever?
Yeah, he doesn't watch any baseball whatsoever, so he had no idea. But mm-hmm. anyway, it was just really interesting to see that Hunter Pence, you know, not only was, again, kind enough to be just like the real Hunter Pence and just, "Hey, you want some tobacco? Here you go. And you try it out." But the fact that the irony of, like, he treats his body so well, yet he dips.
And dips. Yep.
It's just, you find those little quirks about professional athletes mm-hmm. and other people. And
I will go ahead and...
All right.
Right? I'm going to hand out quick honorary mentions to Addison Reed and Steven Strasburg, who in the wake of Tony Gwynn's battle with cancer, both have announced they're going to stop dipping.
Of course,
I just appreciate
Steven Strasburg
that.
Answered those questions while he was dipping, which was fantastic.
Said he was going to stop, which is nice.
As he's got the big wad in his lips, I was like, okay.
He's like, "I'm working on it. I'm working on it
right after this one.
Right after this one.
All right. So we should wrap up here. Why should we hate this guy? I'll go first. I'm just going to say AT&T Park.
These are always good.
Yeah, because what? The Giants have only...
Not won. The people.
No,
not
no.
really the park.
No.
But the
we
park.
We should hate this guy, you know, because, you know, that's a guy.
Why it got to be a guy?
Yeah, two wins out of their last 13 home games. That's, wow. How do you...
Not that they're doing a whole lot better on the road, but yeah, it ain't pretty.
No, well, you figure they've lost... 15 out of the last 19, 11 of those are at home. So
yeah,
most of this misery is happening at home, and it's just they had 20 games at home during this stand. Should say the month of June. Actually, they had 20 games at home, and everybody was pointing to this month, even well before the start of the season, saying that's the month they're going to do well. And the irony is that they did extremely well before that
against
got up to 9.5
completely different teams.
Yeah.
Right, and then hit the teams that weren't doing well and just mangled it.
And then everybody's thinking, "Oh
plus
my God,
Reds.
A 9.5 game lead, not even a third
and into this
of June,
month,
we're gonna be up by 14, 15 games by the All-Star break easily."
My response is,
"Yeah, pretty much."
Yeah,
so
that's
thanks,
home record
at Park is your name, whatever.
I'm just going to hate on everybody. Like everybody.
Just everyone. That's a good answer, actually.
But I really want to be nonpartisan about it. So just everyone. Like, it's nothing personal. It's really not. I'll probably love you next week. You all have an equal chance of being my new favorite guy next week. But I'm just going to hate on everyone. This is a bleak week. Doesn't mean we can't get back from it. We've seen it before. You know, we've certainly had plenty of rough spells in our time as, you know, two-time, years-spaced apart, semi-repeating world champions of baseball. But, yeah, just These are the kinds of weeks that make you want to curl up in a corner and hate everything forever, because it is all terrible forever. So I look forward to us coming back and hopefully not having to continue talking along these terrible lines. But you know what? Either next time we're going to have awesome things to talk about and I'm going to be really excited, or I'm at least going to have come to terms with this and I'm not going to hate anybody anymore. So I look forward to moving along the path to acceptance and or rebuttal. So,
all right. So why will we win it all? And I'm just going with the obvious. If three of the five starters throw no hitters each time through the rotation, no problem.
Nailed it. We've established that when the Giants throw no hitters, they win.
That's 600 ball, right? Three out of five.
Yeah, three out of five.
All they have to do is throw a no hitter.
Three out of five times.
Three out of five times, and
yeah, and you know,
win six just, out of ten, and it's gonna be fine.
It's totally doable. I mean, just like Paul said, it's not that big of a deal, right?
It's not that big of a deal.
No, it's not. That's not that special.
No, especially if you throw against the Padres, it shouldn't be a no hitter. It's easy.
Right.
It shouldn't even be given out.
Right. I mean, as the media has decided to point out, it's like, yeah, no, that's a no hitter, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll grudgingly call it that because, you know, Major League Baseball put a zero in the column or whatever.
It's real easy to retire 27 guys without giving up a base hit, even in the major leagues.
Sure.
Totally easy.
Yeah. With like one walk.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, anyway.
I'm going to go with just... We can't be this bad. This team is too good to be this bad. Even with, you know, Adam Duvall as a starting first baseman, Joe Panik as a starting second, Gregor Blanco and Tyler Colvin as starting outfielders, this team's not this bad.
Right.
And we've seen this team not be this bad. But I expect the team to be better than this, even if they don't get back to the heights of May. Things have to turn around at least a little bit. This team is not this bad. That's really all I got. But, you know, we've had teams like that before where you're like, this team's not this bad. They can't be this bad. And all of a sudden they'll turn around and you've got Pat Burrell randomly deciding to hit homers everywhere. And yep. Then you win the World Series. Yep. We've seen it before. And there is no reason that if we can't, like, at least put some of this together that we can't do it again. But it's on this team to figure out how to do it.
Yeah. It was just wow.
Yeah. I'm also going to go with Willa. We'll also all win it all because of Austin at Tozer Posey T-shirts. Yes, I mentioned him on the Facebook page. If you want a commemorative T-shirt relating to any of the no-hitters and perfect games we've seen in recent memory and or just one of a penguin on a mound and a Madison Bumgarner jersey, check it out. It's pretty cool. So yeah, figured I would bring that up on the actual podcast now that I've mentioned it on the Facebook page just because that was pretty nifty. But anyway.
All right.
Had to end it on a positive note. And cool shirts was the best thing I could come up with after this week. Barring Tim Lincecum no hitter, so
and the Supreme Court in Iraq. Oh wait, never mind. I'm not going to go there.
You know what? Things are bleak enough already. Let's not completely wreck this for our listeners, man. It's the turtles all the way down from here.
The Giants are the least of the world's concerns at this point.
It's true. If you're going to get worked up about something, start with the Giants, and then work your way to other things that you can potentially have some kind of action about.
That's your appetizer,
right? Uh-huh. That's just to get you worked up.
Your melancholy appetizer. There you go.
Oh, man. All right. So we've decided that the good notes we're ending on are a Tim Lincecum no-hitter and awesome T-shirts. And great. We'll see you next week. I don't know if I've got anything else good to say. I don't actually think I have anything else bad to say, which is nice. I feel like I've gotten it all out.
No, so we're going to be neutral now. So if you want to go ahead and follow us, you can follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also read our blog and get those updates at torturecast.com. We also have a Facebook page. Check us out there. You can follow us individually at ChadK21 for myself, at Fried Duck for Ben, and at Willie Dills for the absent William Dills Gregory, who may or may not be on a podcast ever again because he's all like popular in that gaming world. So
neutral, Chad. Neutral.
Oh, damn it. I forgot to do that. So anyway, I hope that you will continue to listen to us despite our despair tonight. But I know you're disparaging too, right?
It's all going to be okay, guys. It's all going to be okay.
They're still in first. Oh, wait, crap. No, they're not. Never mind. Neutral. They're still 10 games above 500. Silver lining. All right. So anyway, we hope to hear from you in the future. If you want to go ahead and tweet us, do it at TortureCast, or you can send us an email at TortureCast@gmail.com. Otherwise, for Ben, this is Chad, and we'll be signing off right now. See you next time on the TorchaCast. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchaCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TorchaCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchaCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.